From the Cape Podcast, issue 29, pages 11 to 13. Go figure, rambler ran Rick's mind. Whoop, 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 midlife crisis alert. So I'm tidying up my reviews of movies on film 4 and correcting some really stupid typos when Bananarama's Love in the First Degree comes on The Vault. For those without access to the FTA channels of the Skybirds, this channel plays old music videos, stuff from The Vault, get it? Anyway, this song is playing and I'm bopping away in my chair thinking, hey, I kinda liked this when I was younger. And then on screen comes the caption. It managed third place in the charts in 1987. 1987. 20 years ago. When I was 13. Worse still.
Who are you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
From 1984. Or how about the bouncy Tiffany with her only song, I Think We're Alone Now, recently covered badly by Girls Aloud. Reached number one in 1988. Another one. I was around a friend's place and talking to a teenage daughter about something on TV. It's some fancy art drawing program. So I tell her that Nobody's a Patch on Tony Hart and Morph. She said she hadn't heard of it, and I was like, you know, Heartbeat. I yanked Tony's website through the live box and played the theme sequence video. An astonishingly 80s-style animation played. After asking me what date this program is broadcast, Becky replied, quite simply,
I wasn't born yet.
There's absolutely nothing you can say to that. That sci-fi cartoon. In a recent issue, I asked if anybody remembered an animated TV series from the early 80s with a blue, red, maybe yellow plane that could also fly underwater. I had a few suggestions of URLs, but nothing pointed me to the correct thing. So I was reading an issue of Coyote Magazine, a Japan manga specialist publication, and I came across something that looked remarkably like what I remember. It's talking about the French release of a 1978 film called Gatchaman the Movie. If this then spawned a series, the timing would be about right. However, I remember the likes of Ulysses 31 and Dogtanyan, He-Man, Thundercats, etc. And I can tell you the girl in The Mysterious Cities of Gold is called Esther Barlitz, or something very similar. So I would have thought I'd have remembered a name like Gatchaman. You have to look on page 11 of the magazine to have a look at the picture. The political bit. We can keep this short and simple. Can somebody explain why the British police have new powers to stop and interrogate any citizen before you could refuse to say what you're up to and they need a reason to pursue it? While in the same week, the self-same government voted in on the technicality of something like 500 abstentions to exempt themselves from the freedom of information laws so they don't need to disclose how they're frittering away taxpayers' money. Thankfully, it looks like the Lords have killed this one. Of course, people will say,
if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear.
This isn't even approaching a valid answer. I mean, you could have heavily armed police on the streets able to open fire on criminals. Don't worry, if you have nothing to hide, then you have nothing to fear. Funny, doesn't sound terribly convincing now, does it? And worse, while the police need reasonable suspicion in order to haul you off if you refuse to cooperate with somebody nosing around in your life, such suspicion is easily manufactured. It need not exist. Simply say evidence cannot be disclosed for reasons of national security. Those in power are so worked up over terrorist phantoms that such excuses will wash for a while yet, especially if some sort of deranged twit decides to leave the guts of a toaster in a backpack in a crowded place, airport, car park, train station, that sort of thing, and phone in a warning to the BBC, thus ensuring the media get the story as soon as possible. In fact, scrub that. Phone it into Sky News. They're more likely to portray it as
imminent end of the world.
The result? Instant chaos. Okay, probably won't take long to discover it's a toaster all along, but people will be only too happy to stab each other in the back over
shocking lapses of security
in order to ensure that the blame doesn't land in their lap. Somewhere along the way, a backbencher will call for a total ban on wearing backpacks in public places. Think I'm joking? I can see this, can't you? Reality TV again. Since the last issue, the world now knows the name Shilpa Shetty, or maybe Shilpa Poppadom, which was one of the more polite insults given. Oh, and give the brain-dead perpetrator that comment brownie points for actually knowing what a Poppadom is. Wow, I'm impressed. Now, some girl called Emily has landed poor old Channel 4 in a quagmire. Again. For referring to something as what ITV's teletext delightfully wrote as star 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 star. It happens! This is not excuse racism, but I'm afraid it really beggars belief that people want reality TV, and then they get all freaked out when people start acting real. You know, there are some whites that say unpleasant things about blacks. There are some religious people who say unpleasant things about the followers of a different belief system. Thin people insult fat people. Everybody insults smokers. It happens, deal with it. Aren't the public supposed to be able to vote people off the show? I don't know, I only watched it once when Jack D won. I didn't even get Channel 4 in my setup, and if I did, I'm afraid I've more important things to do than watch a bunch of people in a house. It's like the Victorian idea of paying to see the asylum inmates, crossed with an ant farm. So this Emily, she should have been left in the programme. If her racist comment was that offensive, then just ring her up and vote her the hell off. The message would be clear. But please, reality isn't politically correct. The United Kingdom doesn't have a video camera for every 14 people, because the country is a sweet place where everybody loves everybody else. Sure, reality can be a blast, and sometimes reality can really suck. And you know what? Sometimes you'll meet a person with views you don't like. People who use words like that out of cluelessness or intentional malice. People that support the National Front, which is basically politically sanctioned racism. Simply exercising stuff from the media isn't going to make the problem go away. Thanks, John. Just a quick thank you to John Williams. My old Presario monitor, a Samsung chassis, started to slowly get dimmer and dimmer and dimmer and dimmer. For a while, I could compensate by twiddling the HD bright, but that had only worked for so long. In the end, it wasn't viable to use as a display device. I suspect there may have been a problem with the supply to one of the focus anodes, but having no tools for this sort of thing, it isn't exactly a home repair job. John loaned me an AKF-53, an Acorn Badge Microvetting. It's a weird critter. It can always sync to 800x600 at 60Hz. Sometimes it can manage 75Hz, but it can't do 85Hz. Sometimes it can manage 1024x768, with the edge being a black bar down the middle of the screen and the sides back to front. That's horizontally displaced by around 50%. There are also a lot of bizarre clicking noises, relays, when the computer starts and the display mode changes, for DOS, then for Windows boot, then DOS again, then Windows boot again, then finally the working display mode. Doesn't Windows mess the display around a lot, huh? However, for a monitor of this age, and unused for quite a while, the colours are good and the display is stable. That's all I ask. Thanks, John. Demonising the geeks! A tad more politics, sorry. Well, what's this with wanting to clamp down on global warming created as a result of computers? That these computers do as much damage as all these dreaded airplane flights. Over recent years, computers have made staggering leaps in efficiency. My first 14-inch monitor is rated at 1 amp. Does anybody have a formula to convert this to watts? I forget. The second, at 0.7 amp. And the one I'm using now, that's John's one, 0.5 amp. And it's probably 15-odd years old. For more efficiency and a bigger display, I could get an LCD panel, a device with many attractions that's rapidly replacing the cathode ray tube. The Acorn Wrist PC, repeatedly, was not able to qualify for a green PC label, as it had no low power mode. It was not seen as worthwhile considering that full operating mode was less than many PCs at the time used in standby. And my laptop uses even less power. Furthermore, isn't this somewhat hypocritical in a country where the off button is fast disappearing? There is no way to turn the digital box off without pulling a plug. When it's in standby, it isn't really. There's just no sound and no picture. The tuner, MPEG decoder, processing, all fully functional in order to keep the program guide up to date. In fact, this is such an expected part of the operation of the box that if you put the thing in standby and disconnect the dish, the time of day clock simply freezes. Compare this to a simple free-to-air digital satellite receiver such as the Silvercrest SL65. When you press the standby button, most of the unit powers down. The quoted power consumption in standby is 3 watts. You could run 20 such receivers in standby for the equivalent cost of a 60-watt light bulb, which is 5 or 6 for the equivalent consumption of an energy-saving bulb. Additionally, the Silvercrest has an actual, real, on-off switch on the back. So what gives? The simplest way to deter excessive power consumption would be to increase the tax on electricity. This would not only target people who leave stuff on standby, but also old, inefficient fridges. Those who have yet to turn their washing machine down to 30 degrees centigrade like the polar bears say we ought to. And generally, the regular, thoughtless waste of electricity most of us are guilty of at one time or another. But no! They intend to demonize the nerdy side of life. Why? The answer's simple. Revenge. They really didn't like, and probably won't live down, the massive anti-road charging response on their website. You know, the one that proves that democracy is alive and well in Britain. And those that make the rules have done such a good job of demonizing SUVs, they hope they can damage geek culture in much the same way. Well, hey, it may work for Joe Average, who doesn't get the scene anyway. But for the rest of us, we're online, we're connected, we talk to each other. And we know what a bunch of useless hypocrites they all are. What with forcing digital television on us, which isn't a bad thing per se, but requiring every household to have at least one set-top box, which no doubt will suffer the exact symptoms they're making such a fuss of, and then to complain about these things? Such audacity. How could we better improve the efficiency of these set-top boxes? Actually, quite easily. When a box is switched into standby, the tuner and MPEG stream decoder is disabled. The device then schedules itself to turn on briefly every half hour to update the program guide. If tuned to a dedicated channel, such as 11.778 vertical on Sky, the update process should take about 30 to 40 seconds. If a regular channel, or DTT, the update should take a few minutes at most. There should be a bad weather trap, that if it takes too long it will give up instead of wasting power trying. I mean, if reception is too bad for updating the EPG, it's probably too bad to watch telly. For firmware updates, the bots will obviously stay on for the duration of the update. So now, we're talking a couple of minutes now instead of always on. An improvement, no?